Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Sri Bhaktivai Bhava ki
jai,
Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai,
Giriraj Maharaj
ki jai,
Jai Anitai Goprema
ki jai.
What was discussed last week? Anyone want to see last week? Hands up if you've been to the course before. Anything from last week? Yeah. Important theme in this chapter. Very good. Anything else?
Religiousness makes a person liberated.
Yeah. Good. Anything else?
Actually, sannyasi is one who reduces his body, words, and mind in the service of Krishna.
Yes.
Lord Chaitanya will deliver everybody, but only the people who are in his devotees.
Anything else?
Giving to someone is offense to Krishna.
Good point.
About the imposters, the news is that there is a Swami called Nityananda Swami from Tamil Nadu. He been caught doing some stupid things with other women, and still he is saying that he will clear his stand what he is doing, why he is doing. So he is a sannyasi, but he is still follow all the regulations. So there was a tape that was released on the media about this. And he's supposed to have a very big follow-up in Tamil Nadu. It's happening still in India.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Sannyasi Arkhedra Sarvalodaya. Sannyasi has to be very careful. He's a little spot in his character. He's magnified.
Anything else?
Sannyasi in the age of Kali is useless. And Indra has started the sampradaya of cheating sannyasis.
Yes, like the Bhagavan Guru, the perfect renunciation is not renouncing the activities, but renouncing the course of activities.
Just to add what Prendam Prabhu said, this was in Tamil Nadu, there was another recent case in Delhi. And this Swamiji, he was operating all the illegal activities on prostitution now from within the temple. He had a temple, within the temple he was operating.
So then he will go to hell in his next life.
He was suffering, he's already in there now.
Yeah, because his real suffering is coming after that. Anything else?
Lord Krishna and Balaram kill the demons, whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to kill the demonic attitude to some people.
So we see in the beginning of the chapter, what is chapter 19 called? Yeah. So, Krita Maharaj had the desire to perform 100 Ashwamedha judges, and King Indra, he's become envious of Krita Maharaj. This is the nature of the material world. Even when someone is very qualified, the nature of the material world is that people become envious. as opposed to offering respect to qualified personalities. So we see that Prithvi Maharaj is a Shakti Vaishavatar. He is a pure devotee of Krishna. He is personally empowered by Lord Vishnu himself. Yet King Indra, who is also an extremely qualified representative of the Lord, he becomes envious of this personality. And this shows the consciousness of the material world. We come to this material world because of envy, and we stay in the material world because of envy. We'll never leave the material world unless we purify ourselves of our envious tendency towards others. So, he performed many yogyas, and then when it came to perform the 100th yogya, then Indra came to Prithvi Maharaj and stole the sacrificial horse from the arena. And he came in the guise of a unsampradayic sannyasi, which means he is not coming in any bona fide sampradaya. Simply he is dressing, taking the appearance of a sannyasi, but it is not coming from any sampradaya. And that's what we see in India these days. They wear all sorts of tilak. Just like I was looking at one astrology book yesterday, and people were dressed in all sorts of things, and they had three lines here and then a few dots here and like that. And you see in India now they wear all sorts of things. There's no sampradaya showing these particular types of tilak. Lord Shiva, then he wears three lines like this. So those who follow Shiva, Shaivites, then they also wear tilak like this. Vaishnavas wear tilak like this. Sri Sampradaya has particular tilak. You see now in Kali Yuga, they wear all sorts of tilak and they dress in all sorts of ways, and it is all concoction. It is not coming from any particular sampradaya. Therefore there is no potency in this Kaitava Dharma. So all this came from Lord Indra's example. Tonight we'll finish the chapter. We'll go from text number 27 to 42. And we'll see how the pastime finishes. Many important lessons still to be seen. Any further questions or comments? Get a chair for Brahmagupta. Yeah, get a chair for Brahmagupta. This one just there.
Any points?
So, the Sampradaya sannyasis, although taken to accept the renowned order of love in the proper way, they come into offenses and they understand that they have to go to a simple way to. But the unsampradaya sannyasis, they are just like two thirds. Is the reaction for their offense higher than the sampradaya sannyasis and the sampradaya sannyasis?
Both are bad. Both are offenders.
Because I was thinking that the sampradaya sannyasi can be an offense.
You mean a Vaishnava?
Yeah. Would actually come in, would be subjected to more severe reaction than a non-sampradaya sannyasi. Because he is both anyway. It's just a sutta.
Well, both will receive reactions. They're in different categories, and Krishna will deal with them differently. They both will. Sannyasa is very, it is a very heavy responsibility. So if one takes sannyas, then if one does commit some offence, or if there is some defect, then one will get strong reactions. Okay. The person who is not in a bona fide sampradaya, who has taken an unbona fide type of sannyas, he will get heavy reactions just for that activity. What to speak of what else he will do. Like, you know, what the devotees are speaking. These guys who are calling themselves sannyasis and then doing all sorts of other things, they're going to hell. They'll get severe reactions for doing like that. And then, those who are sannyasis, bona fide sannyasis, if they commit some offence, then they will get a reaction from Krishna like that. The overwhelming thing is that Krishna says, declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. Bhanu Swami was explaining this when he was here. He was saying that one can commit the most, even as devotees, we can commit very wrong activities, but if we do not deviate in our service to Krishna, then Krishna, he forgives those activities. Although there will be a reaction. But Krishna says, he declareth all, he is my devotee. Any other points?
What about Vaishnava Prabhu? Let's say, commit offense to the devotees, to the Vaishnava Prabhu also?
If we do Vaishnava Prabhu, right?
Yeah.
Then that pastime will come up in the pastime of Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa. So if you offend the devotee, then you have to go to the devotee. Krishna will not forgive until you rectify with the devotee. Any other points?
I heard that the devotional service is so strong that it can destroy all the sins, like, you know, when you put fire in the cotton. So what I'm trying to say is that these sannyasis, if they are sincere in love for Lord Krishna, then I don't think that it is a deviation.
No, they get reactions. Reaction is that. If a devotee commits some offence or some sin, then he gets reactions. But that reaction is just like if the child commits some offence or some sin, the parent punishes. Right? If the parent does not punish, then that is not parent. So if the devotee commits some reaction, then Krishna gives the punishment. But it doesn't mean he stops loving the devotee. He doesn't reject the devotee. But the devotee must accept some punishment for his activity. Any other points?
People in Kali Yuga generally at large, they are devoid of higher principles and values. And hence it is kind of a favor there by Lord by not giving them any power or any siddhi. Because if we have power without values or principle, we can get heaven. So in that way, what I personally feel is, if you are not given any power, especially if you are not given any values, then the big danger that the power will go into the wrong hands. And hence, they are just made like a normal, not without any rich disease or talent. Otherwise, without principle, it will be a danger.
Someone else put their hand up?
The Sanyas Buddha is saying it's basically very difficult, and if they do make mistakes, they suffer. Those are obvious to do like that. How does that justify? One does more phenomenal activities. So if the Sanyas Buddha is basically going to have a very big reaction on what. So how does it justify in Bhagavad Gita what it says about Abhijaya Sudhu
Vandarama? That he's still saintly?
Yes.
Yeah, because Krishna says, that, like Bhagavan Swami explained to us when he's here for Gaupanim, he says that sometimes the devotee makes a mistake, but if he does not deviate in his service to Krishna, okay, some abominable activities perform, but he does not stop serving Krishna, then Krishna says, okay, then Krishna will give some slap. Do not do that again, but he is my devotee. Nothing is lost. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll begin the section. Okay. Okay. When the priest and all the others saw Maharaj Prithu very angry and prepared to kill Indra, they requested him, "O great soul, do not kill him, for only sacrificial animals can be killed in a sacrifice. Such are the directions given by Shastra."
Animals killing is intended for different purposes. It takes the proper pronunciation of Vedic mantras and an animal being put into the sacrificial fire should come out with a new life. No one should ever be killed in a sacrifice meant for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. How then could Indra be killed when he is actually worshipped in the yajna and accepted as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Therefore, the priest requested him to do not to kill.
Okay. Any points here? It's been described here that one has to be very conscientious not to perform any inauspicious activity at an auspicious time. For example, when we come to auspicious time, auspicious place, auspicious circumstance. It's like you come to the temple. Well, the temple is a holy place. So nothing inauspicious should take place here. It is not the right place for inauspicious thing to take place. Inauspicious things should never take place. But especially it should not be done in the temple. Just like sometimes I heard devotees having argument in the kitchen. You know, two devotees arguing with each other and saying things which are not appropriate. So I went in there and I said, what are you doing? Where do you think you are? You're in Krishna's kitchen, the extension of the deity room. What is your right to act like this in this place? So immediately they stopped and they understood this was their mistake. So we have to understand when we go to the holy place, or if some holy activity is taking place, some auspicious program is taking place, and then people are acting inappropriately, it's very inauspicious. So this has to be, we have to be very conscientious of this. And when there's auspicious circumstances, just like someone is getting initiation or so many things, when there's something auspicious taking place, then we must avoid inauspicious activity. So Indra is very foolish because something very auspicious is taking place and he's acting inauspiciously. So this will, it defames him. He loses his potency from this. When you perform inauspicious or sinful activities, your potency diminishes. Right? When you do infamous acts or wrong acts, then your potency diminishes. You become less dear to Krishna. Okay. So therefore, devotees have to be very conscientious to always act appropriately, properly. Proper sadhacha, proper activity, proper behavior, according to Vaishnava principles, according to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If one acts inappropriately, then everything inauspicious takes place. One's duration of life shortens, one's piety weakens, one's fame becomes diminished, one's good reactions to his previous activities become diminished, all these things take place. So one has to be very conscientious and careful. Any points so far?
So in this particular shloka, they were telling not to kill Indra when Varuna is, but when we see the previous shloka there, when the sun is going, they were telling to kill Indra. So,
maybe because Prithu Maharaj himself is the one who is performing the judgment. So maybe for that reason they advise him not to do it. I can't say exactly, but maybe that's the reason.
But I think though, anyone trying to steal Ashwamedha Yajna, he is preparing to invite a fight, a quarrel, and therefore the person is allowed to be killed. Like in Lord Rama, when he performed Ashwamedha, then somebody took, Lord Krishna took the Ashwa, so then the whole army went behind them to pick up a fight. So it's not inauspicious. It's possibly not in the arena where the yajna is taking place, that there you should not have inauspicious activity. But outside that arena, you are invited a quarrel or you are invited for a challenge, so therefore you have to take the challenge. And that's not how it happens.
Good explanations. Any other questions?
Srila Prabhupada has said that not even a blade of grass can move without Lord. So if you think that way, then maybe it was Lord's plan, or most of material nature who was doing this work. Why to blame him?
That's a little bit true, but devotees have to be balanced in understanding the philosophy in entirety. In other words, if you are responsible, if you are a leader, then it is your responsibility, especially as a kshatriya, to punish those who are acting wrongly. Otherwise we'll have chaos in society. So it has to be done, he has to act like that. But in the next few verses, Brahma does say to Prithu Maharaj, he says sometimes things are providence. Some things are arranged by something higher. But it doesn't mean the devotee doesn't act. But sometimes things are out of our controls, and then we have to allow that to take place.
What King Kuturi was right as well. But the thing is, he had the responsibility like the king. But the thing is, why to blame Indra?
Because Indra was foolish. Every jiva has independence. You can't say, oh, I did something, it was just the modes of material nature who made me do it. You have your independence. Nothing forces you to do anything. This is the point. I understand your point, but it's not completely... You have to understand the whole entirety of our philosophy. You can't just make that point. Otherwise we say, well, you know, someone stole all my money. Oh, that was just the modes of material nature. It was just my, you know, it's not like that. Then you have to, Prabhupada already said a few chapters ago, you have to defend your money. You have to protect your money. You know, you can't just walk out of the house and not lock the house. That's irresponsible.
Okay. Yes, sometimes we do things which we don't want it, but somehow we do it.
Somehow we do it.
No, somehow the things are done by us. We didn't want to do it.
Us, meaning you or me.
Yes.
No, then Krishna says, then that's your nonsense. Karma Esha. It's nonsense. Karma Esha, Krodha Esha. Rajaguno, Samubhava. You can't say, well, I did it, and then I could not stop myself. No, of course you could stop yourself. And if someone doesn't stop you, if you can't stop yourself, then someone else should stop you. That's the point.
Somebody who will stop me is also guided by the Lord.
Yeah, it means the person is the Lord's representative. If you do something nonsense, then you should be stopped. Right? That person who stops you, that is Krishna's representative stopping you. If you do anything silly, then your husband will stop you. So what's the problem? You have good husbands, so you're protected. Okay, any other points?
Yes, so normally, in spite of saying that, well, no inauspicious activity should take place when an auspicious activity is taking place, but still, as a sort of a backup, we find at the time of time, the dread or the mangalas and the marriages, huge trumpets are blown, so that even if some inauspicious thing is happening around, nothing is heard at the place arena where it's happening. Similarly, I think the conscience are blown very loudly, so that even if some inauspicious thing is happening, it does not reach or it's not heard by the people who are in the congregation.
Okay.
Death happens in the family, and that is an inauspicious thing that happens. And then we should, is it okay if devotees come to the temple because they are bringing their inauspiciousness along with them to the temple or something? So the recommendation they should stay away from the temple because the temple is an auspicious thing.
I'll answer you. I think you'll understand from the answer what the question is. If the person who dies is a devotee, well, it's not inauspicious. Okay. If the person who dies in the family is not a devotee, then it says in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, then do not enter the altar at that time.
because your consciousness will be a little bit contaminated by the activity, so you shouldn't have gone to the altar at that time. You can go into the temple, you can see the deities. Prabhupada says we should not see the deities in an unhappy mood. So if you're too much morose and everything, then just stay away for a little bit of time. Let your emotion come out, and then you can do it.
And sometimes we see in India this issue is that even if someone has died far away and if you have a distant relative, then also the elders say, no, go to the school, to the temple for a few days and all that.
Things
like
this, yeah.
But they were in the family and...
That means if... you should not go to Krishna when you're not feeling well. Means unhappy. Prabhupada says that. Do not go before the deity when you're unhappy. So if you're feeling like that, then just stay a few days like that. But when you're feeling in the proper consciousness, then go. If it's some distant relative, you don't feel anything, then what's, just go. Go to the deity and pray to the deity and say, please bless this person.
I think it's a Vedic tradition, though, where if somebody passes away in your own family, in your family name, surname, so 11 days you're considered to be Muchi, and this in South India is the case. And therefore, by and large, you don't have to be temple. But nectar devotion overrides on that.
No, nectar devotion says.
So 13 days, it says nectar devotion. 13 days is not good, but yes, not good. And 40 days for the Shudras, 30 days for the Brahmins.
The nectar devotion says Brahman is one amount of time, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, like that. So, like that. The principle is to not go before the deity in an unhappy mood, confusion. Especially means on the altar. You can see the deity, but do not go on the altar, like that. But if your consciousness is too much, you know, if you go in front of the deities and they're all crying and everything, like that, then don't go to the temple. Spend some time. Right, get all the grieving done, and then go to the temple. Okay. Okay. Dear King, Indra's powers are already reduced due to his attempt to impede the execution of your sacrifice. We shall call him by Vedic mantras, which were never before used, and certainly he will come. Thus, by the power of our mantra, we shall cast him into the fire because he is your enemy. Shivata Bhava Kriya.
By chanting the Vedic mantras properly in a sacrifice, one can perform many wonderful things. In Kali Yuga, however, there are no qualified Brahmanas who can chant the mantras properly. Consequently, no attempt should be made to perform such big sacrifices. In this age, the only sacrifice recommended is the Sankirtana movement.
Any points?
Sankirtana movement,
he just... But even in that people don't pronounce the Hare Krishna properly.
What's that?
Even in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, it would be a force. When we chant the mantra, we don't pronounce it properly like in it. So when it comes to the end, Hare Hare Indra, Hare Hare Indra, Hare Hare Indra. It's only a 16th word sloka, but still like we take for granted when we just say it.
Yeah, sure. Prabhupada says in Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said you must pronounce clearly the mantra. When someone hears you chanting, then they should understand that it's the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Sometimes you hear devotees chant and you're not sure what the mantra is that they're chanting. That is not Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That is something else. Any other points? In Kali Yuga, only one thing is effective, and that is Sankirtan Yogya. Even we do other things, like we do Yogya, and we do some of the other types of things that which are done in the Vedic system, but it is not so efficient in the Kali Yuga. It doesn't have the same potency as the Sankirtan Yogya. When Prabhupada saw Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan, then he invited all the local priests to come, the Brahmins to come, to do the Yogya in the temple for 3 days, so that Krishna and Balaram could be installed. But Prabhupada said the actual installation was all of these devotees doing Sankirtan. That is where Krishna becomes invoked. That is more powerful than Kali Yuga. But in order to get some credential, then Prabhupada arranged that they would have the yajnas, and they all came and everyone did the yajna. But in Kali Yuga, it doesn't have the potency. And the previous yuga, then you would slaughter the animal before the sacrifice began, and then the animal would be brought back to life. Right? That means that is potent. That has the potency. In Kali Yuga, none of these things can be done. So it doesn't have the same potency. Right? So the emphasis is not given in Kali Yuga to all these other types of activities. The only thing which is emphasized in Kali Yuga is Sankirtan. Because Kaliya Dosi Nite Rajan, it's just full of faults. Sankirtan, Mahaprabhu says, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nijan Sava Shakti, Tatarapita Niyamitahai, Smalani Na Kalaha. There is no hard and fast rule for chanting. You can chant any time, any place, and it is effective. That is the potency of the chanting. Does not require external purity. Purity of the objects, purity of the place, purity of the time. The only thing which is necessary in chanting is sincerity. The one chants sincerely, then one will get the effect of the chanting. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, it is the only thing which is auspicious, because everything is inauspicious in Kali Yuga. As soon as Sankirtan is performed, everything becomes auspicious. That is the potency of Kali Yuga. Sorry, that's the potency of Sankirtan in Kali Yuga. Okay. Any other points?
What Purusha Sukta is that all this in Pali language?
We do Purusha Sukta too?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Prabhupada said Brahma Samhita.
I've seen Padhyatra commencement in Chennai, this year, last year.
Yes.
Started with Purusha Sukta and the Ratham started. And here on Dauraphone Monday, upstairs, Manasama Maharaj, that the time that Purusha Sukta was.
Yeah, so you're doing a yajna, so then you recite Purusha Sukta, you recite Brahma Samhita, like this. These things are recited like that. But it is not the Yuga Dharma. It does not have the same potency in Kali Yuga as Sankirtan does.
Okay. If it's not that potent, why is it in Dharma then? When you have a more potent weapon, why use a less potent weapon?
Because this is a Vedic culture, and so when Prabhupada gave Vaishnava Diksha, when he gave initiation to his disciples, he would do a fire yajna. There is potency there, it's not impotent, but it is not the Yuga Dharma. It will not have full effect in Kali Yuga. It means all of you have to wake up in your home, do a fire yajna every morning. It's not going to have the same effect as chanting 16 rounds. It won't. In Kali Yuga it won't have the same effect. Previously it would have had the same effect. It's not that there is no potency there, but compared to Sankirtan it is not as potent. Is that okay? Are you satisfied or not?
Somehow not. It's still confusion, because in Purusha Sukta you are invoking Lord Vishnu in the form of the universal form. That's the offering. The universal form is not pure spiritual form. In the sense, Lord Krishna there.
So what's your point?
So still what is being done? That's it.
Because it is a Vedic sacrifice. So this is the way, if you do yajna, like when we do initiation, when Prabhupada said, okay, we do yajna, like that, then we have to do it according to the Vedic system. That is the Vedic system. You chant Purusha Sukta, you chant Brahma Samhita, you chant certain mantras. Right, that is the system.
That is involved from Sri Sampradaya, but they recite Panta Suttas, not just confined to Purusha Sukta. They recite Narayana system, they recite Sri Sampradaya.
Yeah, but the point is that the Gaudiyas, we have our Hari Bhakti Vilas compiled by Sanatana Goswami. These things are compiled in our Sampradaya also. We're not taking it from someone else's Sampradaya. This is our heritage also. We also have specifications how to do these things. Is that okay? Any other points?
The thing is, the first two lines of the translation indicates to me that if somebody is trying to do, by sacrifice, trying to please Lord Vishnu, and if somebody invades him, then his power will be reduced and less. The one who is trying to offend.
Yeah. Yeah. Prabhupada says later on in this section, Prabhupada explains that. Mm-hmm. Oh.
my dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged in performing the sacrifice called for Indra, the king of heaven, in a mood of great anger. When they were just ready to put the oblation in the fire, Lord Brahma appeared on the scene and forbade them to start the sacrifice. Lord Brahma addressed them thus, "My dear sacrificial performers, you cannot kill Indra, the king of heaven. This is not your duty. You should know that Indra is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, he is one of the most powerful assistants of the Personality of Godhead. You are trying to satisfy all the demigods by the performance of this yajna, but you should know that all these demigods are but part and parcels of Indra, the King of Heaven. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice? In order to make trouble and impede the performance of King Prithu's great sacrifice, King Indra has adopted some means that in the future will destroy the clear path of religious life. I draw your attention to this fact. If you oppose him any further, he will further misuse his power and introduce many other irreligious systems. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Prithu." Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices?
So Brahma came down to pacify King Prithu regarding his continual performance of 100 sacrifices. King Prithu was determined to perform 100 sacrifices, and King Indra took this very seriously because Indra himself was known as the performer of 100 sacrifices. Just as is the nature of all living entities within this material world to become envious of their competitors, King Indra, although King of Heaven, was also envious of King Prithu and therefore wanted to stop him from performing 100 sacrifices. Actually, there was great competition, and King Indra, to satisfy his senses, began to invent so many irreligious systems to obstruct King Prithu. To stop these irreligious inventions, Lord Brahma personally appeared in the sacrificial arena. As far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Such ceremonies are known as karma, and there is no need for a devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. As the ideal king, however, it was King Prithu's duty to perform sacrifices. A compromise was therefore to be worked out. By the blessings of Lord Brahma, King Prithu would become more famous than King Indra. Thus, Prithu's determination to perform 100 sacrifices was indirectly fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma.
So what are the points in this?
By the influence of Brahmaji, he could achieve the success of the medium. Great blessing.
Yeah.
So you just want to know how to behave according to time, place, and circumstances. So Lord Brahma interferes and stops the Brahmana for attempting to do the correct thing according to their level of the consciousness and understanding of the Shastra. Lord Brahma is a senior Vaishnava, he has better experience in just dealing with these matters, and he intervenes and says, no, it's not right. So he must physically know this isn't the senior counsel.
Good.
I believe that anywhere in the material world, even if you go to the higher planet, and they are higher, elevated in their consciousness, but because they are in contact with the world of material nature, which are present in the material world, they will be able to. Lord Brahma then was eager to adopt more religious acts so that if that those get induced, it could get worse.
I don't know what to learn from all this.
You don't know what to learn from all this.
Okay, King Indra was doing something which is not a bad example. King Prithu Maharaj did 99 sacrifices. Now
the end Brahmaji came and said there is no use. I don't know why he started. And saying that if we stop him again, then he will do some more acts which are again abominable.
Prabhupada explains it, yeah. It gets explained in this section. Prabhupada answers that question. So we'll wait till that purport and then we'll answer that question.
But where will he have life, Prabhu? When he's invited into fire sacrifice, he would in any case die. The question of he doing something else would not arise at all. Isn't it? When the mantras are so potent that they are able to invite Lord Indra into the fire, obviously dies in that. So there's a question of he further performing any religious activity, he's dead.
Yeah, if you don't kill him, then you can, but if you kill him, then you can't. So.
No, no, the way Brahma is advising,
I'm really tired tonight, so but I understand your point. But you had a point?
I just had a question. We see that the priest stopped Maharaj Prithu from killing Indra, saying that don't do anything inauspicious or the animal should be sacrificed. But then in the next verses, they are also going to invoke the mantras and kill Indra, no? So, is that way of killing different than what Maharaj
Prithu
was going to do, and
that's
why it's not
inauspicious? Seems like it, yeah. Seems like. Maybe because one is with a bow and arrow, which means blood will fall onto the sacrificial arena. Whereas when if they chant mantras and it gets drawn into the fire, then maybe that will not pollute the arena. That's as far as I can say. So I'm not sure. So, you cannot escape envy in this material world. You go to the highest planet in the material world, to the lowest planet. All the places of birth and death. And all the places of envy. Cannot be escaped. As Jamuna Lila Mataji said, it can only be escaped by bhakti or devotion. Bhagavatam is for who? Niyamapsarana. One who is Niyamapsara, or who is non-envious. How do you become non-envious? We're all reading the Bhagavatam. We're up to Canto 4, Chapter 18. And we've been going for 5 years this May. Right? Is all the envy gone from your heart? No, it's still there. But, is the envy reducing? My envy is reducing by studying the Bhagavatam. So this is the process. And the process is that by bhakti, by devotional service, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, padasevanam, asanam, bandhanam, dasanam, sakyam, atman, nivedanam, then the envious nature decreases in the heart. This is the process. So therefore, envy is the nature of the material world, and if we see that even amongst the devotees, many times envy enters the society of devotees. Srila Prabhupada explains that this movement cannot be stopped from anything external, it only becomes stopped from internal quarrel. This is the nature of the age of Kali, it is quarrel and hypocrisy. Sometimes it enters the society of devotees. So how do we avoid envy and quarrel and entering amongst the society of devotees? Then the association must be based upon hearing and chanting about Krishna. Just like we all have one saving grace, many saving graces in our life, but one for myself, my main saving grace in my life is the Bhakti Vaibhava course, because I come here and there's no envy. It is Niyamapsaranam. It is Niyamapsara. There is not an envious exchange amongst the devotees. Because why? Because the Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, and due to the transcendental sound vibration of hearing the Bhagavatam, everyone's consciousness is elevated. Otherwise, if we didn't discuss Bhagavatam, we'd all be envious towards each other. The nature of the material world. But that is cleansed by hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is the process. Srimbatam swakata Krishna punya shravanam kirtanam vidyanta sokya bhavrani vidhuno sivitsitam. All the improper things in the heart will be removed by hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is how ISKCON becomes pure. And you see in those places where devotees hear and chant about Krishna, then there are no quarrels. Where devotees don't hear and chant about Krishna, right? And Prabhupada says, the temple is not just for waving some incense in front of the deity. That is Kanishtha Adhikari. The temple is for preaching, for teaching others about Krishna. Then the deity worship becomes potent. Right? If there's no hearing and chanting, they just wave some incense, but they do not do hearing and chanting regularly. Everything just becomes materialistic in consciousness. And if it's materialistic in consciousness, then devotees do not have... Everyone does not become elevated, and then it just becomes mundane reciprocations amongst devotees. And devotees, ultimately, what happens? Right? When neophyte devotees get together, then what do? They commit offences to each other. They begin to criticise and they commit aparad. And then their spiritual life becomes very difficult. So therefore, the whole purpose of this one is to hear and chant. When we engage ourselves in hearing and chanting, then we become purified in consciousness. And then offences disappear, and devotees become non-envious, and then we all make advancement in Krishna consciousness. That is the point of ISKCON. This is what Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be. Not a society of Kanishtha Adhikaris, but a society of Madhyama Adhikaris. Where we hear and chant together about Krishna. And by each other's association, we help each other come towards Krishna. That is the point. So then Prabhupada mentions in the purport that when sense gratification becomes the prime goal of a living entity, then at that time, he will perform irreligious activities, adharma. And we see in this material world, people, when they desire sense gratification too much, then they will do anything to get their sense gratification, and they will perform any activity. And that is adharma. And that simply implicates them further and further in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Prabhupada said that as soon as you say, I want, that is sense gratification. Even though we're devotees, but if we say, I want, right, that is sense gratification. As my spiritual master said to me one day, he said, who cares what you want? he said, he asked me a question, he said, why do you want to do this particular thing? And I explained it to him, he said, who cares what you want? He said, who cares? Who cares what you want? What does Krishna want? What does your guru want? What do the devotees want? That is what is important. It doesn't matter what we want. As soon as you say, I want, that is sense gratification. So therefore, now this material world is full of people who are only interested in sense gratification, and therefore they perform adharma. Just like yesterday, we had the Sunday feast at the farm. One very nice gentleman, he came, he was actually a retired police commissioner. He spent 30 years or so, or maybe 40 years, 30, 40 years, in the police force. Got to a very high level. And then he's retired, and he came to the Sunday feast. Very nice man. So having a nice conversation with him. And he said to me that he became a police officer in 1970. And he must have retired only a few years ago. He said each year, each decade, 70, 1980s, 1990s, he said the crime was just spiralling out of control. He said he cannot even understand where society is going now. He said he can't even imagine what it will be in the next 10 years and in the 10 years after that. He said it wasn't a bad job being a police officer back in the 1970s. At least there was some sanity in society. He said now it's just insane. And why is this? Sense gratification, calm, lust. And then what happens? The living entities will perform any sinful activity. Adharma. They do anything now. Anything. Just to enjoy the senses. Then Prabhupada says, so what is meant to be done? There must be authorities in society to correct all these things. Just like if we're going off track, who is supposed to correct us? Our authorities. Right? They chastise us immediately. What are you doing? What is this nonsense? Why are you performing like that? Immediately. Right? Otherwise, and it says that if the guru does not chastise the disciple, if the father does not chastise the child, they will become weak. They will develop bad character.
Therefore, the guru chastises. Therefore, the parents chastise. Otherwise, bad character. No? So therefore, it must be done. And this is the problem in society these days. No one is correcting. No one will stand up and say, this is wrong. No? This is incorrect. So at least within our society, because that society is crazy, and that will take time to rectify, at least in this little society, ISKCON, which is a small society, then at least this should be maintained. If we see something wrong, if we see someone misbehaving, if we see misconduct or irreligion in ISKCON, then immediately it must be corrected. If some deviant philosophy comes, or some deviant practices come, immediately it must be checked. It cannot be tolerated. Because if it is tolerated, then Kali will enter, and so many problems will come. So immediately these things must be checked. This is the responsibility of every devotee. You cannot say, if you see something wrong, you have to point it out. If you cannot do anything about it, you take it to the higher authority. Right? If the temple president is deviating, then you take it to the GBC. Right? If one of the GBC is deviating, you take it to the GBC body. That's the system in this time. Right? We don't accept deviation. Okay. And finally, Prabhupada says that if a devotee acts properly, then he receives the blessings of his superiors. Prithu Maharaj was acting properly. He followed the instructions of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma blessed him. He got more than what King Indra got. King Indra performed 100 sacrifices. Right? Prithu Maharaj only performed 99. So Indra is superior. He did 100, he did 99. No. Because he followed the instructions of Brahma, whereas Indra deviated, then he received more than Indra. He became more famous. His kingdom flourished more. Right? He became more powerful. Right? So Krishna says at the very last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say, Sanjaya says, right? Wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there will be victory, morality, extraordinary power, and opulence. No? So this is, if devotees become very moral, which means very well behaved, right? Then automatically opulence will come, extraordinary power will come, and victory will come. We'll be successful, because we will get the blessings of our superiors. If you do not act properly, you will not get the blessings of your superiors. And if you do not get the blessings of your superiors, you will go nowhere in spiritual life. Now, my Guru Maharaj was saying in one lecture I listened to in the last few weeks, he said most of the devotees in ISKCON, most of their advancement is not being made by their japa. Because many devotees' japa is not very good. So it's not our japa, right? It's the blessings of the senior devotees where we're actually advancing. That's where most of our advancement is coming from. Right? Some devotees chant good japa, so they're making advancement. But a lot of devotees is just serving and getting the blessings of senior devotees. That's basically how we advance in Krishna consciousness. Any points?
In Kalyan, most of the bureaucrats and administrators of the king, they are very selfish to help the society. How does taking suffering in the situation?
How can we change the government? Is that what you're saying?
How can the citizens change it?
How can the citizens change the government?
The bureaucrats are very selfish.
Yeah.
They don't want to transfer their citizen. How does the citizen suffer?
How
does they can be overcome the situation to be enough?
How can we overcome the irresponsible government? Is that what you're saying? Then we should collect lots of money. Buy tanks and good planes and things, and we should attack them. That's one way.
Then it's not a first system.
What's that?
Then it's not a claim to be a non-system.
Yeah, so then the other way is you go to the parliament, you knock on the door, you say, step outside and we'll sort this out. You say, you send your best man, we'll send our best man, right? And we'll sort it all out. Now. Right? And whoever wins, they will be the... I don't know how to do it. It's very difficult to do.
Prabhupada just says you preach, spread Sankirtan, and kill the demonic nature. If the government doesn't listen, then let's influence the citizens. Just like when Prabhupada was on the planet, in New York City, we brought one 13-story skyscraper, big, on Fifth Avenue, I think it was. I can't remember where it was, but 13 stories. Prabhupada said, never sell that property. Because it was such a prominent, you know, Hari. And 13 stories, and down the side of the building, it said, Hare Krishna. You know, like, you know, imagine looking at a 13-story building, it just says Hare Krishna down the side. Very powerful. Preaching for our movement in New York City, the most prominent city in the world. And then after some time, unfortunately, the devotees did sell it. Like that. The Prabhupada said, don't ever sell it, but they did sell it. So, one devotee told me that he was on a plane somewhere flying. One sannyasi told me he was flying. And he was sitting next to one man, and the man said that, actually, I used to work for the CIA. And the CIA actually made a plan. I don't know if this is true, but this is what I was told. That the CIA were concerned the Hare Krishnas were becoming a little bit too influential in society. So they made some plan to try to buy that building. Because they saw it would become very influential. So that's what happens. When our preaching becomes very influential, we begin to change the masses. You know, and that's what we have to do. Because if we can't change the government, then change the masses. But if we begin to change the masses, then the government, they suddenly notice these guys are serious. So what will we do about the government? We just keep preaching. Best thing is actually you make them favourable. In Hungary, we have one very successful project called New Brajdam, which is run under the direction of Shivaram Swami. Shivaram Swami, a few weeks ago, was given the second highest award in Hungary. It's called the Gold Cross or something. He was awarded that by the state parliament in recognition of his works in Hungary. He's seen as being a saintly person in Hungary. So he, Maharaj, he invited the entire cabinet of Hungary, the entire parliament, means the prime minister, it doesn't mean like just the, like in Victoria we have the state government and we have, what's the premier called now?
Brumby,
okay. So he's not so influential. But Kevin Rudd is quite influential. Right? So Shivaram Swami got this, the country, like the federal parliament, he got the entire cabinet to come to New Brajdam and he gave them a big dinner like that and showed them the project and it's becoming very popular now. So then what happened is that in Hungary, in the last few years, they made a rule in Parliament that every citizen in Hungary has to give 1% of their income to a charity of their choice. And the fourth most popular charity in Hungary is Hare Krishna New Brajdam, which they call Krishna Valley, in like that. So this is how they influence the Parliament. Preach to them and make them do things which will attract their attention, make them favourable. So we have very good public relations, we have very good public image in Australia, the Hare Krishna movement, from our prasadam distribution and so forth. Very, very well. Especially in Sydney, in the previous years, in the 80s especially, they used to distribute in King's Cross, which is a very degraded part of Sydney, they used to do Food for Life. And it became very, they propagated it extremely well in the media. It became very well known in Sydney to the point that people in Sydney could basically go out in Sydney and, you know, do Sankirtan, do book distribution and so forth. And people in Sydney saw the Hare Krishnas the same they saw the Salvation Army, like on that level. In Melbourne, it's not quite like that. We're very liked in Melbourne, but in Sydney, like, they loved us. I was surprised. I used to go to Sydney and people would come up to me and say, oh, you're Hare Krishna. I'd say, yeah. I'd say, yeah, just take money. Just give it to you. Yeah, Hare Krishna, no problem. Like that. Such a good public image. So this is how to influence the government. If that doesn't work, then buy tanks. In the beginning, we can do something very good. Any other points?
It's called was in battle with acquiring the land in Bombay. So they came and they were trying to destroy the temple there. And one of the devotees, when police came, he talked to the police force that we follow the four religious principles. We don't do meat, we don't do illicit sex, we don't do gamble. But across the road there is a Holiday Inn hotel. And they do all the four activities there. If you want to do something, go and stop people there. The police inspector said, that's the only reason we are here. What's wrong with you? If what you are doing this, if people started doing this in general, then that's a concern for us.
How is the behavior of Indra to sanctify?
Just speak up a minute.
How is Indra punished?
How is he punished? In what way?
How is behavior of Indra? So Lord Brahma is almost physically bound down in his head by instructing the fruits to be carried in the universe.
Primarily, he's lost his reputation in the universe. None of the sages respect him now. The other demigods don't particularly respect him. He's done a very foolish thing. Okay. Anything else?
It's written there in verse 30 that all these demigods are but parts and parcels of Indra. I thought we are all parts and parcels of Lord Krishna.
The demigods, Indra, the person who occupies the position of Indra, is 10 times more powerful than the other devas. The devas are very powerful. There's a sequence, like human beings are this powerful, and then Gandharvas are this powerful, and then Asuras are this powerful, and then finally it says the devas are 10 times more powerful than the Asuras, and Indra is 10 times more powerful than the other devas. Okay. So he's considered to be an empowered representative of the Lord. Okay. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, but the parts and parcels, you know.
Where is it?
In the translation.
In the translation of 30.
Last two.
But you should know that all these demigods are but part and parcels of Indra, the King of Heaven. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice? What's the Sanskrit? Bhagavat Tanu. Part of the body. It's just like, because he's the king, like that, so if someone's the king, like Preacher Maharaj is the king, they say all the other citizens are part and parcel of his body. Because he is ruling the citizens. He's the most powerful of the citizens. He maintains the citizens. So Indra is like that. He maintains the demigods. He's the most powerful.
So then you said he stole his part and parcel of Krishna.
Yeah, it doesn't mean like that. It's not the same as that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just it's being said like that. It's not that he is God.
Okay.
Thirty-three. Lord Brahma continued, let there be good fortune to both of you, for you and King Indra are both part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you should not be angry with King Indra, who is none different from you. My dear King, do not be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have been properly executed. Sacrifices have not been properly executed due to providential impediments. Kindly take my words with great respect. We should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangement, we should not be very sorry. The more we try to rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest region of materialistic thought. My spiritual master said, not long before he left this world, he said that fate is very powerful. Providence is very powerful. Sometimes your life is going in a particular direction and you have a plan, but you just get lifted and taken somewhere else and everything goes in a completely different direction. So our destiny is very powerful. Krishna's desire is very powerful. So sometimes when things change in our lives, or if there is a reverse or a difficulty or a complete change of direction like that, then sometimes there's only so much we can do about it. So a devotee, we need to consult our authorities, our guides, and get their guidance. We need to consult those who are our guides and take their direction. Is this Krishna's arrangement? Because if Krishna is doing something, what is the use of trying to resist the situation? If providence, if our fate is taking us in a particular direction, you will waste a lot of energy and put yourself into a very negative state if you try to change it when it cannot be changed. Just like I read, you know, there's that little calendar we change every day. Different little calendars the devotees make, and you change in different quote by Prabhupada. A couple of days ago then Prabhupada said, talking about the astrologers, he said, what's the use of going to them? He said, what will happen anyway. He said, your destiny is already planned. He said, why consult the astrologer? He's just going to tell you what's going to happen. It's already going to happen. He said, you cannot change anything. Our lives are already basically mapped out by either our karma or by Krishna. And that's it. And you can't really do anything about it. Just like your mother-in-law doesn't like you. Your father-in-law doesn't like you. Your father doesn't like you. Your mother doesn't like you. Your brother doesn't like you. Someone doesn't like you. And then you just spend your whole life, why didn't that person like me? Right? That's your destiny. It's all because of what you did previously. It's already mapped out. When you're born, it's already there. It's in your subtle body. All this karma is in your subtle body. Right? It is already going to happen. And you say, well, you know, I will try to... You can't really adjust very much in this world. And it's already fixed. That's what the Jyotish is for. Yeah? When you're born, they cast the chart. Right? It's already there. It's imprinted. It's already there. Right? Only Krishna can change it, if he desires. Right? Krishna can make your life go one way or the other. That's it. But the point is, you cannot change these things. So, Brahma says to Preacher Maharaj, he says, this is already going to happen. Don't waste your energy trying to change this whole thing. Don't try to perform 100 sacrifices. You're destined now to perform 99. Just accept it. Devotees can accept these things because we have a higher destination or a higher... higher goal, or we have a higher arrangement being made for us. Like if our life doesn't work out as devotees, just like before I became a devotee, my life was not working out. But then Krishna gives you an alternative. So devotees, we take that alternative. So we have relief. Non-devotees, they don't have any relief. Their lives just fail, and then what is their choice? They don't have an option. We have an option, okay? It's not working materially, let me surrender to Krishna. So, Preeti Maharaj is being advised, this is not going to work, just surrender to Krishna. There's something higher for you to learn out of all of this. Don't get caught up, this is all just karmakanda anyway, this whole yajna thing. You should concentrate more in bhakti, on devotion to Krishna.
Can I ask you a
question? I'm going to keep going, Mataji, because I have to get to verse 42, and we still have a few things to cover. We should talk about this. Yeah. So if you have a question, you can ask it later on. Because I want to finish this section. Where are we up to?
35.
Lord Brahma continued, stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even among the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. So what does Prabhupada say in the purport? That as soon as there is competition in the material world for sense enjoyment, there will be envy. Because everyone wants sense enjoyment. That's what the material world is about. And as soon as someone else is obstructing your sense enjoyment, then you become envious of them. Especially you see this in the workplace, where you work. Another guy wants your position. Right? And then what happens? He becomes envious. He starts telling everyone in the office things about you. Did that ever happen to you once or twice? The guy in the office, he was saying something behind your back about you. Did it ever happen to you in ISKCON? It happened to me. I mean, this is my office. I work in ISKCON. I'm an ISKCON devotee. I'm maintained by ISKCON. Sometimes in ISKCON it happens. You're working in ISKCON, people saying things about you. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not true. This is just the material world. It is competition. It's based on envy. It's material. Prabhupada said, the proof of how much you love me is how much you cooperate after I am gone. Right? I know sometimes I'm not the most, you know, pleasant person in the world to be with. And other people in this material world also not the most pleasant people. But we just all tolerate each other. I know that I am not the best person in the world to be with. I know sometimes I have habits. I'm very strong by nature. So I have habits. Sometimes I'm too strong and too forthright, and I may annoy other devotees, agitate other devotees. So I know that sometimes I do those things. So I have to learn to try to be less like that. And the other devotees, we have to tolerate each other, or correct the devotee. Sometimes we have to say to the devotee, Prabhu, the way you're behaving is not proper. You have to change the way you're behaving. You have to begin to act differently. Especially when you begin to hear it from more than one person, then you should take notice of that. Don't be proud. Okay. Just see how Indra, the king of heaven, was creating a disturbance in the midst of the sacrifice by stealing the sacrificial horse. These attractive, sinful activities he has introduced will be carried out by the people in general. O King Prithu, son of Vena, you are the part and parcel expansion of Lord Vishnu. Due to the mischievous activities of King Vena, religious principles are almost lost. At that opportune moment, you descended as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Indeed, at that opportune moment, you descended as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Indeed, for the protection of religious principles, you have appeared from the body of King Vena. O protector of the people in general, please consider the purpose of your being incarnated by Lord Vishnu. The irreligious principles created by Indra are but mothers of so many unwanted religions. Please therefore stop these imitations immediately. So it is our duty, just like it is the duty of King Prithu, as instructed by Lord Brahma, to defeat irreligion. So similarly within ISKCON, we must defeat irreligion. If we see improper behavior in ISKCON, immediately it must be stopped. If we see improper doctrine or improper philosophy in ISKCON, immediately it must be stopped. And if we see improper practices in the material world, immediately it must be, we must say something. Maybe we can't do that much about it, but we must say something. Just like all the people come to our farm and we preach to them, don't kill the animals. We don't kill our animals, why are you killing other animals? So some people don't like to hear these things, but we don't compromise our message. We have to preach very strongly to the world. Right? Just like so many millions of copies of Higher Taste have gone out around the world in the last 20 years or so. And so many people have become vegetarians. Right? So we have to fight this rascal society until there's no animal slaughter left on the earth. Right? This is our duty in ISKCON. We have to work on behalf of the Acharyas, on behalf of the Bhagavats, the Mahatmas, of King Preacher Maharaj, this is his duty, so we also have to follow like that. The great sage Maitreya continued, when King Preacher was thus advised by the supreme teacher, Lord Brahma, he abandoned his eagerness to perform yajnas with great affection, concluded, and with great affection concluded a peace with King Indra. After this, Preacher Maharaj took his bath, which is customarily taken after the performance of a yajna, and received the benedictions and due blessings of the demigods, who were very pleased by his glorious activities. With great respect, the original king, Prithu, offered all kinds of rewards to the brahmanas present at the sacrifice. Since all these brahmanas were very much satisfied, they gave their heartfelt blessings to the king. All the great sages and brahmanas said, O mighty king, by your invitation all classes of living entities have attended this assembly. They have come from Pitriloka and the heavenly planets, and great sages as well as common men have attended this meeting. Now all of them are very much satisfied by your dealings and your charity towards them.